Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to Double Down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to Michael Krieger of LibertyBlitzkrieg.com. But first, there's an old saying that goes something like this. When you're up to your neck in alligators, it's easy to forget that the initial objective was to drain the swamp. Snap, snap, snap! So many alligators for such a small swamp! Stacy!
Yes. Size-wise, Washington, D.C. is a relatively small city. But apparently, it's quite difficult to drain that swamp. Many have tried. Will Trump fail? Because some are already suggesting, even though he's only president-elect, he's not even coming to power, but he is nominating all sorts of people. He's indicating who he will have in his cabinet, and hearings will unmask swamp creatures in Trump's cabinet, Democrats say. So the Democrats are getting ready for the confirmation hearings. They're looking forward to this because they reckon that there are a lot of swamp creatures in Trump's proposed cabinet, and they, while they have no power or authority to stop it at this point, they don't have any leverage, they do certainly have the ability to humiliate him in public, allegedly.
Yeah, well, my prediction is that Trump will not play by the rules and that he will use by any means necessary to get his way in the first 100 hours of his administration. And folks in Washington, I think what we've seen recently over the past couple of decades is that they are not too, it's not too hard to bend them in the way they need to be bent. And as long as he's got the public support, I think he'll get his way.
Well, with nominees like Representative Tom Price, a proponent of fundamental changes to Medicare to be health secretary, and Steven Mnuchin, a Goldman Sachs trader turned hedge fund manager's treasury secretary, Democrats hope to use the confirmation hearings to highlight the wide river of incongruities between Mr. Trump's campaign promises and much of the team he is assembling. The goal, to fuel a narrative that the incoming president and the Republicans who support him cannot be trusted. Chuck Schumer says it looks like he has a whole lot of his nominees had their career in the swamp.
I mean, talking about bankers, Goldman Sachs bankers, and the thing about bankers is that they're mercenaries. And it depends who's paying them to do what. Now, usually we say all bankers are dangerous to, you know, social pariahs, et cetera, because they're not getting any good direction from the top. You know, go back to the 1970s. I use this as an example. New York City was about to go bankrupt. Felix Rohatyn, who was a Lazard Frere banker, came in, created the Municipal Assistance Corporation bond, bailed out New York City. It was a wild success because, okay, it was a banker who was under the correct direction to do something positive. Now, if Trump has these professional financial mercenaries on his team under the correct direction, you know, we'd rather have him in the tent, you know, facing out than outside the tent facing in. I mean, that's my thought at the moment. I mean, that can obviously change on a dime, but it's kind of the best case scenario. But, we'll see what happens here.
Well, to get the swamp creatures into his cabinet, up until 2013, it would have required 60 senators to approve it, to confirm his candidates. As of 2013, the Democrats changed that threshold to 51. So now if he has all these swamp creatures, the Democrats are unable to stop it because the Senate will be 52 seats will be Republican. And Claire McCaskill, Democrat of Missouri, says, at the end of the day, we were the ones who changed it to 51. I think it's important to remember how righteous we were.
Absolutely. Hoisted by your own petard. So threshold is lowered. He's got the swamp creatures. He's got the public support. Well, you know, let the crocodile games begin.
Alligator, I believe it is in the U.S. And it's time now to go to Boulder, Colorado to talk to a former swamp creature, you might say. He worked on Wall Street. That's Michael Krieger of LibertyBlitzkrieg.com. He actually made it to the list, that famous list that was promoted by the Washington Post, of a list of journalists and bloggers who need to be perhaps sent to a re-education camp.
It's Double Down with Max and Stacy.
Oh, yeah, it's a new show on Sputnik Radio.
Michael Krieger, welcome to the show. What do you think of Trump's swamp creatures?
Yeah, so I don't see it the same way Max does, and I'll tell you why. First of all, the whole time during the election, one of the reasons I couldn't get behind Trump, I mean, there are several reasons, but one of the main ones was that I never trusted that he disliked the financial system. I never felt like he was. Bernie Sanders, for example, was very vocal, very aggressive, very focused on Wall Street, right? Saying the business of Wall Street is fraud, saying that we should have jailed people, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he was. That was one of his key issues. For Trump, it really wasn't. I mean, he was more on immigration. He talked about foreign policy and trade. Those were kind of his big things. So also being, you know, this law and order kind of guy. So Wall Street, despite, you know, the perniciousness of the industry and how much harm it causes and how much power it influences, he was relatively quiet on Wall Street. So I pointed that out the whole time. The whole time I wrote over and over again, I was like, I'm worried that this guy doesn't really see Wall Street as a threat. So let's say he was focused on Wall Street and then he picked these people. Then I think you could give him the benefit of the doubt. You could say, well, he really wants to go after the banksters, so he's using banksters to go after the banksters. I was never convinced that he wanted to in the first place, and I'm absolutely not convinced he wants to now. I think the only one that actually really hates the banksters like we do is Stephen Bannon, actually. I think he's the only one. When you look back at what he says, he kind of talks just like I do on Wall Street, like Max does, like Stacey, like all of us. These other guys, you know, this Mnuchin guy, I mean, if you look at him and kind of what he did with IndyMac and One West after the financial crisis, this is an ideology.
Let's talk about Steve Mnuchin. Go further into him. Who is he? What does Donald Trump hope to appoint him to? Tell us about the guy. Why is he so bad?
Oh, right. So I don't think Trump ever wanted to really go after the financial system. And so Mnuchin is like, you have to see him and people like him. This is a religion, you know? This idea that, you know, you put a dollar sign on everything, everything's about money. Ethics does not play a role whatsoever. You know, when you see an opportunity to make a ton of money, it doesn't matter who's being hurt or how much cronyism is involved. You go for it, and you go for it big. And that's the attitude of a guy like Steve Mnuchin. That's his entire history. You know, he was the Goldman Sachs partner. That doesn't even bother me that much. His dad was a Goldman Sachs partner. I mean, it's a nice headline. But actually, what really bothers me is his history in the financial crisis, post-financial crisis. He went in there. He purchased IndyMac with, you know, George Soros backing, and then renamed it to One West, and then engaged in some of the most egregious foreclosure practices in the post-financial crisis era. You know, a person who has any sort of ethics or decency, who's already extraordinarily rich, who already comes from an extraordinarily wealthy family, that the fact that this is what he's trying to do, it tells me a lot about who he is, what his character is, and how he sees the world. And don't forget, he was hobnobbing. I warned about this. Hobnobbing a personal guest of Stephen Schwarzman of Blackstone. I mean, there's nobody worse than Stephen Schwarzman, who, by the way, Trump is also bringing in to advise.
Okay, so Michael, so, you know, point taken. You've got a rogues gallery of banksters. And, you know, certainly under the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton, they were let loose when they repealed Glass-Steagall, when they did the Commodity Futures Modernization Act. And, you know, they were basically given unlimited credit, unlimited ability to do. But look here, so it's a new administration. Trump comes in, he goes to these guys and say, look, the country's got $20 trillion in debt. You know, come back to me with a way to get it to $10 trillion, and I'll give you a 1% fee. That's a $100 billion piece of business. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, I don't think that's – you see, I don't think that's what he wants to do. I guess that's where really where we differ.
But that's where he has stated on multiple occasions that, you know, $20 trillion in debt, almost every single one of his stump speeches, he said the country's got too much debt. It's got close to $20 trillion in debt and, you know, stated debt, plus it's got some unfunded debt, you know, $50, $60 trillion in debt, to a GDP of $15 to $16 trillion. It's an enormous piece of debt. This guy understands a balance sheet. He understands an income statement. He knows bankers. He deals with them all day long. He says, look – you know, cut the debt in half and you get an enormous fee. No debt cut, no fee. And, you know, our bankers like to do deals. That's what they do. You know, it's not so much making money. It's about doing deals. You know, the money is just a way to keep score. You know, Schwarzman wants to have more money than Mnuchin. You know, they don't, on a relative basis, the absolute amount of money is irrelevant. They'll never spend what they got right now. They just want, you know, bragging rights down at the country club. So if he goes and says, cut the debt in half, I'll give you $100 billion. No banker is going to refuse that deal.
Yeah, here's how I see it playing out. I see what's going to happen is I see much more debt under Trump. I see if he's going to fund this infrastructure that he wants to do, it's going to be a lot more debt. And I guess if you want to make a positive scenario of why he's a good guy to have in there, you could say that when the debt blows up, which we both know the debt's going to blow up one way or the other, he's got, you know, he's the type of person that knows how to deal with debt blowing up. I mean, that's kind of the only argument I've seen that makes sense, is that he's like this master of having too much debt and blowing up. And that's what's going to happen to America no matter who is in there. So that's kind of how I see it. I don't know. I don't think he's going to actually cut the actual debt amount using these guys. I see it more like Trump does not have a strong ideology as far as the financial system in Wall Street is. He's appointing guys he thinks, you know, are smart and clever. And, you know, he hopes that they give him good advice as far as dealing with, you know, the crisis that's coming, I guess. But I think these guys are kind of like vultures.
Okay, well, Steve Mnuchin, of course, did manage to buy up IndyMac. He got to keep all the good debts. The taxpayer, i.e. the government, got to keep all the bad debts. And the taxpayer ate the losses. Steve Mnuchin and his partners walked away with hundreds of millions of dollars each. But let's talk about another bit of the swamp, and that is these very profitable corporations like Carrier Corporation, which makes his air conditioning units down in Indiana. They've had no problem with profits. All their units are profitable using American labor in Indiana, and still they decided to go to Mexico. Trump managed to keep some of those jobs in the U.S., but in particular, I want to talk about this notion that he's presented of a more stakeholder sort of capitalism rather than shareholder. And he tweeted that he would impose a 35% retributive tax on corporations who left America. By the way, there's already a 50% exit tax on individuals leaving America. So here he's saying, if you want to have your corporation, if you want to build your corporation in America, use our infrastructure, use our capital system, and build this huge corporation, and then dump all the stakeholders in your corporation and move overseas just for a little bit more profit for its shareholders, well, then we're going to put tariffs of 35% on anything you import into the U.S. What do you think of that?
Right. So without getting into the specific tariff angle, I think it's a much bigger issue. And this is one that I do kind of – I'm sympathetic with Trump on. And one of the things I liked about him was – because I think he means it with trade. If you go back and you read his interview he did in the 90s of Playboy, it's amazing because he was talking about a lot of the same things. But when it comes to – incentivizing American companies and incentivizing American business people to help the country, we don't do that in this country at all. In fact, a lot of the incentives, as you know, are to screw over the American public and the people. And so I think Trump is definitely right on that macro view. And I think a lot of people that resonated with a lot of people. And Carrier is a good example. Again, remember, Carrier is a unit of United Technologies, which is a gigantic defense contractor. And I think they're in the top five of receiving, I think, Pentagon payments. So in particular, when it comes to federal contracts, right, when taxpayers are subsidizing contracts to companies, of course they shouldn't, you know, these companies have a duty, in my opinion, to the American people and the American public. So I think Trump is going down a good path with regard to this stuff. I don't like the idea that, you know, they're giving state tax breaks to United Technologies. I like more of the stick approach, you know, as you were mentioning, with threatening these guys like, hey, look, you know, if you're going to do this, why are taxpayers giving you billions of dollars in contracts? So
yeah,
I have
exactly.
No problem.
I mean, so United Technologies, a huge defense contractor, he can kill two birds with one stone. He's going to shrink the military budget,
right.
You know, deprive United Technology of contracts and say because they wouldn't play ball with their workers in Indianapolis. You know, he looks good. United Technology is the bad guy. We can shrink the defense budget. There's $1 trillion saved right there.
Right. And you also highlight the point, which is so many of these quote unquote industries in America are just basically taxpayer subsidies, right? I mean, for example, I remember when you looked at, I was like, I think it was, what was that company? Barrett Brown had to do with, was it Kellogg Brown? No, it wasn't KBR. Anyway, Booz Allen, right? Booz Allen Hamilton. 99% of the revenue or something like that was from the U.S. government, but they pretend that they're a private company.
Right. So the age of conglomeration is great scaling up, but under a Trump presidency, like it was under Teddy Roosevelt, could be a liability. Anyway, Michael Krieger, we got to go, and that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Michael Krieger of LibertyBlitzkrieg.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.